far, nearly all of China's industrial development has taken place along its eastern coast. But recently, the central government has been pushing investors westward into the interior, underdeveloped provinces. This Go West policy has, in just a few short years, turned the backwater city of Chengdu into a high-tech boomtown. Gene Kumagai visited the city and has this reporter's notebook.
Chengdu isn't on the way to or from anywhere. It's in the middle of a wide, flat plain at the foothills of the Himalayas, 900 miles southwest of Beijing, 1,000 miles northwest of Shanghai. Early on in its 2,400-year history, it was renowned for its silk brocades, lively trade, and intellectual life. But with the fall of the Shu dynasty in the 3rd century, Chengdu became a sleepy provincial backwater. After the communists came to power in 1949, they cited their most sensitive military work here because it's so cut off from the world. Then, 5 or 6 years ago, the Beijing government launched the Western Development Strategy. Billions of dollars flowed into the hinterlands, extending new highways, rail lines, international airports, and telecom links. Hundreds of multinationals flocked to Chengdu, and the city was reborn. I'd wondered what life was like in this sprawling city of 11 million, at the literal frontier of China's tech revolution. I figured I'd find a wild, freewheeling, anything-goes kind of place. Instead, I found darkness. It was close to midnight on a Saturday, and I rode in a leather-upholstered sedan, exhausted and jet-lagged, on my way from the airport to the hotel. I gazed out the window, only half-seeing the place. And then it hit me. There were no streetlights, no store lights, no lights at all. Just the darkened outlines of apartment buildings and office complexes, stretching on for mile after mile, like a modern-day ghost town. Except for the car's two headlights on the road, it was utterly dark. Later, I learned that, like every major city in China, Chengdu doesn't have enough electricity to go around. Though the province boasts an abundance of natural gas and hydropower, its electricity is shipped back to the power-starved East Coast. Chengdu suffers blackouts for 2 to 5 days every week. By day, Chengdu was sunny and warm. The wide avenue in front of my hotel was packed with shoppers, streaming in and out of gleaming indoor malls, checking out the latest from Tommy Hilfiger, Disney, and Esprit. Young women chatted on cell phones. Young men packed the video arcades. Young couples laughed, nuzzled, and walked arm in arm in a way that would have shocked earlier generations of straight-laced communist youth. Chengdu is a place full of right angles and contradictions. By night, it's an eerie void. By day, a shopper's paradise. I'd heard from city promoters all about Chengdu's 29 universities and its 500,000 professionals. Cheap and plentiful housing, a Carrefour's hypermarket, and soon a Walmart. A shiny new airport with direct flights to Tokyo and Paris. Good air, clean water, and the Himalayas at your doorstep. We drove to an industrial park where dozens of multinationals have set up shop. This area had all been farmland once, and amid the wide, well-paved boulevards and corporate complexes, I spotted some crumbling stone houses, many of them still occupied. These were probably the original inhabitants, their land and livelihood gobbled up by Chengdu's rapid rise. A few months earlier, in another city in Sichuan, a similar land grab had triggered a massive protest. Tens of thousands of displaced farmers seized the local government headquarters and held the Communist Party chief hostage. But when I asked about the farmers in Chengdu, and even pointed at them from the car window, the promoters just shook their heads. "Nobody lives here now," they said. When I needed to get a new SIM card for my cell phone, the bellboy at the hotel directed me to a street just around the corner. Any particular store? I asked him. No, no, it's all cell phones, he said. And so it was. The city's bustling cell phone district offered store after store, block after block, and thousands of models of gleaming new cell phones. Trying to escape the crowds, I ducked down a back alley. As my eyes adjusted to the dark, I found a parallel universe, an enormous secondhand bazaar entirely devoted to cell phones. Hundreds of vendors sat cheek by jowl, their battered wares arrayed on narrow card tables. In nearby stalls, eagle-eyed technicians hunched over jewelers' benches, making precision repairs. The owner of one repair shop told me that he turns a monthly profit of 10,000 yuan, or about $1,200. That day, he had five guys working for him. Assuming they split the profits equally, which they probably didn't, they each took home about $200 a month. Workers don't get health care or a pension or paid vacation. Those things went away years ago when the communist government began embracing capitalism for real. More than a few Chinese people I met joked to me that the U.S. today, with its Social Security and Medicare, is more communist than China. In the end, I stopped trying to tease through Chengdu's many contradictions and instead embraced the one thing that for me remained absolutely, unvaryingly good and true, the food. Sichuan is known the world over for its fiery cuisine, and no matter where or what I ate in Chengdu, I always ate like an empress. I had one of the best meals of my life in a state-run dumpling house. Sitting on a hard bench, surrounded by office workers and students, I feasted on a 75-cent bowl of tender meat dumplings floating in an oily, spicy sauce. I still think about those dumplings, probably more often than I should say. For Living on Earth, I'm Jean Kumagai.
Jean Kumagai is a reporter for Spectrum Radio, the broadcast edition of IEEE Spectrum magazine. To find out more about Chengdu and other high-tech transformations in China, visit our website, livingonearth.org.